It's Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on the Fan.
Good morning. Welcome back to Talking Golf with Ann Liguori. And let's get right to our next guest, Brando Chambly, golf analyst for the Golf Channel, Golf Central, Golf Channel's live from coverage of major championships, former tour player. Brando, welcome to Talking Golf. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks, Ann. Nice to join you. Thanks for having me on. How are you doing this Sunday? Mother's Day, by the way.
So I
happy
know.
Mother's Day to you and to all those in your family.
Thank you so much. I'm a mother to a 14-year-old golden retriever who is laying right here at my feet.
Hey, that counts.
That does count, for sure. They need a lot of mothering. But so how things are going? I know there have been a lot of changes at the Golf Channel. Do you like doing the studio work in Connecticut as opposed to Orlando? And maybe talk about some of the other changes with the channel.
Yeah, I mean, obviously huge changes. After 25 years and change, the Golf Channel's vacated their studios down in Orlando and moved up to Stamford, Connecticut. And, you know, quite a number of people chose to come up, but a number of people didn't. So, yeah, I mean, there's, you know, I guess a growing pains a little bit, I guess, sort of fitting in up here and trying to find your way around. The new studio is gorgeous. I mean, the world of sports has seen it before. It's much, much bigger than the studio we were using down in Orlando. You know, and it's full of, you know, people who are running here and there and who are talented and been doing other sports, but they're diving into golf. And, you know, the pulse of golf never stops. You know, other sports, you know, you've got downtime and then you crank it back up, but golf is around the clock. So I think they probably look at us golfers running through the office and then they're like, God, do you guys ever stop? And it's like, well, there's no downtime. Every week it seems like it's a major and there's not just one golf tournament. There's 3, 4, 5 big golf tournaments everywhere every week. So, yeah, I think we're all enjoying it up here. You know, I've found new restaurants. I've settled in here at Stamford when I fly up from Arizona. Get over to New York City a little bit. I had my kids in this week, and they were looking at colleges. So looks like one of them's going to move up here anyway. So I'll be up here for her and for work.
Well, welcome to our neck of the woods, to the New York metropolitan area in Connecticut. That's awesome.
Yes, quite enjoy it.
Let's talk about, you know, style of golf commentators. I've always admired your honesty on the air, but do you find that more and more golf commentators are perhaps becoming too vanilla, holding back their opinions on the air?
Well, I think it's always kind of been that way, really. You know, there's different styles. If you're out in the field and you're calling live golf, which is something I don't do very often, but if you're calling live golf, obviously you're out on the range and you get to know the players, you get to know their coaches, you hear their opinions, and obviously they sort of come out on the air. It's the rare commentator that has the ability to offer insight, sometimes critical insight, that sort of runs against the grain. Johnny Miller was the exception for the most part. You know, you can go back to the earliest days of golf on television to Byron Nelson, Dave Marr, you know, Jack Nicklaus, Lee Trevino, Curtis Strange, Ken Venturi. You know, Ken Venturi sometimes was critical on TV a little bit. I think he struck a nice balance. But Johnny was the king. He was the very best there was. But, you know, I think Paul Azinger does a fabulous job, and he'll absolutely be critical sometimes. But for the most part, you know, golf has been a very genteel world. And, you know, superlatives, yeah, they get overused. And the reason I think you should use superlatives sparingly is because when something really and truly great comes along, if you have lavished every shot, every player, every event, every course with superlatives, you know, they're diminished, such that when you actually do need to say something is great or extraordinary, it is no different than everything else that you've called great or extraordinary. And it's diminished. I think for the most part, you know, superlatives are the fat. And, you need to cut the fat and wait until it's appropriate. But in studio shows, you know, it is my job. I always say it's my job to tell the truth. You know, sometimes it's hard to find the truth, but it's my job, and, you know, you want to be fair and accurate, and that's what I try to do.
Well, you know, it just seems like there's, like, this fear out there of angering the tours, that people are too, you know, you're afraid to anger the players and to say anything negative, and, you know, I'd love to hear more opinion from respected commentators. You know, I just think that's there's an important place for opinion with television golf. So we'd like to see more of it.
Yeah, you know, but in live golf, the cadence of live golf is so fast. You know, you're going from shot to shot to shot to shot to shot. You know, you're basically, you know, you're talking about the yardage and the club and the situation. And there's just not a lot of time to give opinion in live golf. It just moves far too fast. And until Sunday, and, you know, it gets more down to 2, 3, 4 players, and the cadence slows down a little bit. But I certainly understand what you're saying, and you know, it's just not easy when you become friends with people that you're covering to sort of speak critically about them. It's a difficult thing to do.
Sure, it really is, because you have to get to, you know, close to these guys. To really understand the sport and to be knowledgeable and to express, you know, the news, and then to turn around. It's hard to criticize people that you know and like, obviously. And they're all very, most of them are very likable, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. But I've always said, you know, I think that, you know, you have to be able to speak critically of people you like and complimentary of people that maybe you don't particularly care for. You know, but I strive to be, you know, indifferent towards the players. I certainly, you know, I respect their talents and their golf swings and the way they go about things and what many of them do off of the golf course. But I try. It's not always easy, but I try to be, you know, as unbiased and fair as I can be. But it's a difficult thing to do.
It really is. Well, let's move to this Premier Golf League, which is, you know, has been back in the news in a big way this past week. The league is reportedly offering top players tons of money to jump ship, so to speak. What are your thoughts about the Premier Golf League?
Well, it's already splittered into two tours, because there is, you know, the Premier Golf League, which, you know, raised its head a little more than a year ago. And now there's the Super Golf League. And the Premier Golf League originally had money coming from Saudi Arabia. Now the Premier Golf League says the money's coming from American and sort of European investors. And the Saudi Arabia investors have moved and started the Super Golf League. And that's 10, 12 tournaments. The Premier Golf League's 18 tournaments. Both of them are trying to usurp the biggest players in the world and sort of buy immediate prestige. You know, it's taken 124 years for the PGA Tour to establish prestige and records. And that's, you know, along with the money that players play for, they're playing for their legacy, their place in the history of the game. And, you know, it raises very, I think, tough philosophical questions. Do you value prestige and your place in the game more than enormous money? It's not that, I mean, they're already making enormous money, so it's almost 2, 3, it could be 4 times the money they're making that are being thrown at them. But for this to take place, you know, a domino has to fall, which is to say a player has to commit, and then, you know, hopefully that gives them the momentum. I'm sure that's what they're hoping for. That it'll give them the momentum that other players will commit. But if they do, they run the risk of, well, immediate suspension from the PGA Tour and possibly expulsion forever from the PGA Tour. You know, it's something that the PGA Tour has vetted with their lawyers, and they think they have the ability to do that. It could set up, who knows, it could set up court cases if that were to happen. But you know, I'm sure that's what they're banking on, the Super Golf League and the Premier Golf League, that one player will commit and then another and the dominoes will fall. He raises, you know, very tough questions. And, you know, I mean, there's managers involved. You know, you think, well, no, it couldn't happen. But the fact that players go over and play in Saudi Arabia is testament to the fact that they can be bought. You know, when you watch, and maybe you remember this, but remember when Greg Norman was playing at Hilton Head and Jamie Hutton, the leukemia patient, was following him around? And it was a marvelous story. And, when Gary Woodland, and Amy Bakkerstadt were having so much fun at the 16th hole at the Waste Management Phoenix Open, you know, of course, you know, Amy's, you know, a college golfer with Down syndrome, and, you know, those stories, and they're plentiful in the world of golf. They make you all warm and fuzzy over because you see the professional golfers are using their talents to motivate and inspire and do wonderfully charitable acts. And that is what the PGA Tour has been as much about as providing entertainment. And along comes, you know, these entities as golf becomes more global, where it doesn't make you warm and fuzzy. You know, it makes you feel, you know, sort of gross when you think about
right.
what they're being asked to do, to go over and play in Saudi Arabia. Whether the players know it or not, they are in effect laundering the reputation of the most reprehensible regimes in the world. They don't know it, but they're essentially paid ventriloquist dummies who are spitting out the words of the reprehensible people who are trying to pretend like they can get along in the world. And meanwhile, Sharia law pervades in that country. And that's where some of this money's coming from. And it's the most reprehensible people, you know, regime in the world. And, you know, it's hard to imagine that players would go and dirty their reputations by participating in events where the money comes from those sorts of places. But we've seen it already. I mean, players have gone over and played in Saudi Arabia, and I just don't think they're aware of what they're doing.
I agree. It's as Rory called it, it would be a money grab, and I just can't see these entities working at all because they need a lot of these star players to jump ship, and that's just not going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, Rory, you know, Rory is, you know, he is a shining light in a world of, you know, very articulate and clever golfers. He stands out, you know, because he has a great sense of right and wrong. And it's not just always about money. Even Brooks Koepka said, you know, he didn't phrase it quite the way Rory did. Rory said, you know, I'm not particularly happy with where the money's coming from. You know, that's Rory being diplomatic and saying he didn't like where the money's coming from. But Brooks said, that it'd be hard for him to look players in the face whose job he was taking away. And in essence, imagine, you know, there's a law called Price's Law, and it's an interesting dynamic, but it's certainly applicable to the corporate world, which basically says that within any group of employees, it's roughly the square root of the number of people working there who do 50% of the work. So if you have 100 employees at a business, Price's Law says that 10 of those players, 10 of those employees, 10 of them are doing 50% of the work. Those 10 are the most easily recruited away employees. They're the ones with the most options. They're the smartest, the most high energy, conscientious employees you have. And if a company, and there's lots of ways companies can go bankrupt and out of business, but one of them is to lose key employees. And it's a very real dynamic in the world in the corporate world, such that, you know, it's very often when you know, private interests are buying a corporation, they'll get key employee insurance. That dynamic is what's being threatened on the PGA Tour. Imagine the PGA Tour without the most popular, the most entertaining. Yes, winning goes with it, but also so does the fame, this sort of Kardashian element that goes along with winning. Imagine if they lost all of the people that moved the needle and left. You know, of course, that's why, you know, Jay Monahan and the PGA Tour are taking this very seriously. They know what's at stake. And I think they've taken all the right and necessary moves, not just to protect their interests, but also to protect the world of professional golf and the reputation that the golf world has, which is, besides providing great entertainment, very philanthropic in its background.
Absolutely. And, you know, what about this $40 million bonus pool that they want to split among 10 players who perform the best in social media, who move the needle? What do you think about that program?
I think it's appropriate. I think it's what needs to be done. Again, there is, you know, what these leagues, these super leagues, are doing is shining a spotlight on sort of an untapped or, I'd say, underappreciated part of winning. At least, you know, they are directly compensated, players are, for their skills.
Can you give us an extra minute?
For the entertainment that they provide for us. But there is this sort of Kardashian element of fame that the super leagues are trying to tap into. Like, we want to buy your fame. And that player incentive program is sort of getting at that issue. And it is a very small investment to protect the overall health of professional golf.
Brando Chamblee, my guest. We never have enough time, but
no
problem. What do you think has been the best story of the season out there so far? You have Jordan winning again, Stuart Cink at 47 winning twice this season, huge win for Japan with Hideki Matsuyama, Lydia Ko getting back into the winner's circle. What has been, you know, the best story in your opinion?
Yeah, I mean, I think you've tapped into it. I mean, I certainly have enjoyed Jordan Spieth clawing his way back into, you know, the upper echelon of golf, but also Lydia Ko. You know, these are, and the reason these stories are so compelling is they handled the downturn in their games, both of them, with such grace. They were constantly asked about what's wrong. Why are you playing poorly? You know, the camera never left them, so it showed their bad shots. It showed their disappointments, but yet they always handled the questions with grace. So it's, I think the whole golf world sort of puts their arms around these two players and like, come on back and great to see you back.
And last question, and if you can answer this quickly, what do you want your legacy to be, Brando, when you look back on your career in life?
I guess somebody who was very passionate, and loved the game of golf, and followed it, with great respect and admiration for the players they were covering, but also the game of golf. I'm a big fan of the history and the traditions of the game of golf, and I try to, act accordingly in the game.
It's always a treat to talk with you. I need to allow for much more time. Have a wonderful day, and
thank
hopefully
you, so much.
You can get out and hit a few balls. It looks like it's going to be a nice day.
I'll be in the studio covering all the golf today.
I know, especially during the weekend. Well, listen, have a wonderful day, and my best to you and your family.
All right. Thank you, Ann. Right back.
Thanks
there.
So Bye-bye. Much. Brando Chamblee.